2016 SES. Nigel Carmody for Squires Loft, Albert Park, Essendon, and now 104 Main Street, Mornington. The Stakes Specialists.
Nigel, great to see you. Looking well. I was actually going to touch on this with Snides. How long do the players have off for the Christmas New Year break? They get a bit of a break, don't they?
Yeah, most of the AFL clubs are giving their players off till either the middle of that first week in January, so about the 5th or 6th. So speaking to a lot of players over the last few days, they're actually getting off till, I think, Monday the 9th in a lot of cases, and probably finishing up around the 21st or 22nd. So it's not dissimilar to how the, I guess, the initial off-season leave period's going. Clubs are putting a lot more trust in their players who are becoming increasingly professional, and the old days of getting on the sauce and eating too much over Christmas and New Year's is gone by the wayside for most AFL players. They keep themselves in good nick and come back so they can have a bit more time off.
Because I asked Nides, is this the big trap? The players all are pretty fastidious now for the first day back at school when training begins, but then they're there really for half term and straight back onto the school holes. And this is the tough one because you get back with your family, you've got Christmas, Boxing Day, can be a bit of a picnic barbecue day and New Year to negotiate.
Just can't afford to not be professional. And of course they'll come back and have about a month or so until they're at least playing into some upscale intra-club games. But for anyone who's played sport and had to do time trials or beep tests, there's nothing worse than doing one when you know you should have looked after yourself better in the 2 or 3 weeks prior to.
Let's talk cricket, but not as we have been talking it for most of today and yesterday. You want to talk about a little addition to the Gabba experience.
Well, it just shows how, I guess, sports are continuing to think about how they attract patrons to the game and enhance the experience. And I guess if you're in Brisbane at the moment, the temptation would be able to stay home next to the pool and enjoy the cricket maybe from the comfort of your own home. But Cricket Australia and the Gabba saw fit to remove 953 seats to put in an 8 by 6 metre pool that's housing patrons over the next few days during the Gabba test. And I guess it's building on some of the innovations that we've seen in global sport where in different climates, I guess they're trying to attract fans through, you know, whether it's different restaurants or food offerings within the ground or I guess different ways to enjoy the game. We've seen cricket, I suppose, lead the charge in this country over the last few years. We've seen bays at the SCG filled with sand to create beaches and now a pool going in at the Gabba.
94291116. We're not expecting to have too many listeners in Melbourne who've enjoyed the Gabba pool, but has anybody out there experienced any of these in-ground add-ons or what would you call them?
Features.
I can tell you that the really epicentre of such endeavours, not surprisingly, is the US. It's baseball, but it's not Major League Baseball. It is minor league baseball, where many cities in America have, and smaller cities, not towns, but mid-sized cities, have AAA, AA teams, and it's a very competitive market. So they do whatever they can to get people to the ground. And I've just been reading some of the things that they have got going on. It's hilarious. I'll read a few out, but if you've ever been in a pool watching the cricket at the ground or maybe sitting on it, I think they've had couches as though you're at home, just sat up there like you're watching the cricket. If anybody's been part of those experiences, we'd love to hear from you.
We've seen a pool featured in the NFL. The Jacksonville Jaguars, who are obviously down in Florida, so have good conditions throughout the NFL season while people are freezing in New England and Green Bay and places like that. So they've actually built a pool in their park and had some good success with fans a couple of years ago as well.
To John and Glenn Huntley in a moment, I'll pardon the pun and you'll understand why in a moment, pepper a few of these through the conversation because I want to start with Dr. Pepper Ballpark, which is the home of the Frisco Rough Riders in Texas. And they have a dedicated area for food vans. So it's an entire food van parking area. And they also enhance the experience with a giant Dr. Pepper dunking pool.
Oh, would you want to be?
No, I don't think it's a big.
You're not physically being dunked in Dr. Pepper?
It's a big can filled with something, you know, water, chlorinated water, but it looks like you're jumping into a giant can of Dr. Pepper. Is that not good?
It's good, again, as long as you're not having Dr. Pepper, which is a nice product, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I wouldn't have thought that's washing off in one shower.
No, you're not swimming in it, but you do get a chance to get, I think it might be one of those ones where you're looking at it, you throw the ball at, I think it's a dunk, you know those dunking, so it's a Dr. Pepper dunking can. So they probably get the local radio DJ or somebody that they, what do they call? A boo boy? I'd be, if it was a small enough town and I lived in it, I'd end up in the can. Which I offer to him. John's in Glen Huntly. Good morning, John.
Morning, how are you, mate?
Good, and Nigel is probably better.
Sorry, Nigel, I didn't remember your name. There you go. Hey, they were talking about the pool on the cricket commentary last night, and I was saying that when it first opened, it was pristine and clear, but by the end of the day, it looked like a sewage pit, and the guys who'd been sitting in it hadn't left all day.
I got a sense that it was crystal clear to start off with, and maybe just people, because it's most of the guys are just sitting there with their feet in it. I guess when I take my thongs off at the end of the day of cricket, you wouldn't want to put them in a pool.
Well, they're cleaning the pool three times a day, and they've actually enlisted the Pool Works company, who are obviously up there for doing maintenance and all that sort of stuff. So I would have thought they're doing their absolute best to try and keep it in pristine condition.
The Salt Lake Bees play at Smith's Ballpark. It says here, unsurprisingly, there's not many frills or add-ons at the Salt Lake ground. They're
fairly staid,
fairly austere
fan experience.
Let's head to Nick in West Footscray. Morning, Nick.
Well, morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Very well.
Good. So, early 90s, I was in America at the time, and I got invited to a Brewers game, a Milwaukee Brewers baseball game. We sat in a restaurant called the Skybox, which had a window tilted at about a 45-degree angle, so you actually looked above the players while you're eating and enjoying the game.
That Skybox, now, I'm familiar with, is it Toronto Blue Jays that have...
They've got an indoor stadium, the Skydome, I think.
Yeah, and it sounds like a great experience, Nick, and I imagine he's still there, mate. At the time, given it was some 20 years ago, it must have been almost jaw-dropping. Nothing like that at the time anywhere.
25 years ago, it was through the Milwaukee Brewery, the Miller's Brewery. They invited us up there, and it was just an amazing experience just to be part of a, not only see a game, but to sit up there and have fine dining while you're watching a baseball game.
The experience at Toronto is similar, but I believe that's a hotel that is the, it's actually part of the ground, but those sky dome, those super boxes are actually part of a hotel. Do you know at Melton there are, it's got a hotel.
At the Trots?
Yeah, there's two rooms. It serves as a hotel, and you can stay there overnight about 200 metres out from the winning post.
A few English football grounds that have got some unusual features in terms of amenities and people almost living within the boundaries of the grounds.
Yeah, I mean, West Ham regularly at our old beloved ground, Upton Park, a number of people buried for West Ham never ever paid to go to a game. They just watched it from there.
Sit on the roof. Well, or the balcony.
And there was sort of council flats, which is the equivalent of our housing commission. It's not bad to get a bird's eye view of an EPL game. I love the sound of this. It's called First Energy Park. It's home of the Lakewood Blue Claws, who are affiliated with the Philadelphia Phillies. And being the Blue Claws, their theme is very much based around crabs. That is the type you eat. They have a tiki surf bar. So you actually, to go to the tiki bar, you have to get in the pool, which is at the ground, and they serve seafood tacos and tiki cocktails.
That's a nice way to watch a game.
Yeah.
Interesting to see off the SMS a couple of people who've done the rite of passage pilgrimage to an Australian tour of the West Indies.
Yes.
And been able to sit in inflatable pools or something to the like and have a very cheap day and enjoy the festivities. It's also something I think we see pop up at the South African grounds. They seem to be pretty well set out in terms of having maintained their grass hills around most of those venues. And you see a few different sponsors or even just fans able to walk into the venue with their own inflatable pool and set up camp.
Off the SMS, I mean, my mate Mark Lawrence used to blow up a kiddie pool and sit and watch all the test matches from Hammer in Roeville, it'd be a funny sight. Just come over and watch the cricket. I can just imagine a bloke, a
old
couple
mate
of
just
blokes
sitting in the backyard,
just in the kiddies pool, zinc cream on the nose, Esky next to him. And one thing about a kiddies pool, you know, on a hot day, by the end of the day, that water's bloody hot.
Mm.
It ain't refreshing.
Doesn't take long to heat up.
Des is in our ear. Morning to you, Des.
Yes, mate. What about Flemington Racecourse, pal? Right, not by the start. The units are built right up the top there.
I'm not quite sure where they are.
You know, where they start, excuse me, where they started it, down the straight. Yeah. The Flemington Straight, right down the end of it. On Flemington Road, off Ballarat Road, you come down the back there.
Yep.
You go up the hill into Flemington. Well, the unit's there. All these big ones. Opposite where the old...
It'd give a fair view of the home turn and the start. I don't know how good you'd be in a finish.
No, not in the finish.
If you called a race from there, you'd sound like Ron Papps.
Yeah. No way.
Good on you, mate. The Americans just are full on. I mean, they're... obviously, AAA is very competitive. Quite a few of the grounds have got a spa. But there's another team. Actually, they're also affiliated with the Phillies called the Reading Fighting Phils. Their mascot is an ostrich. So the hot dog vendor walks around throwing hot dogs, pretending he's riding an ostrich. You know, he's probably got his feet in the stockings. Now, that ground has a spa, but it also has an enclosure for live ostriches. So at every game, they have the live ostrich pen.
Part ballpark, part zoo.
Only in America. I mean, gee, must be great fun for the ostriches. And not to be outdone is the Rock Around Express on the Pacific Coast. Their theme is very much beef. They have cattle at the ground. The same cattle that all their burgers are made of. Now, if I was a vegetarian, I'd be upset, and I'm not, and I'm almost upset anyhow. So they've got this specific cattle that is the sort of hallmark. They're from Texas, of course, they're from Texas. Now it makes sense. So they've got Texan beef in all their products and a couple of steers at every game to remind people of where the best beef comes from in America.
A few ballparks have interesting features that I guess are more to look at rather than actually get involved in. Of course, probably the most famous one in Major League Baseball being at the Angels Stadium in Anaheim, where they've built the California Spectacular, where geysers erupt and they have a stream that cascades down a mountainside covered with real trees, artificial rocks, which are just behind left center field, so whenever anything good actually happens.
You know, I went to a restaurant in the States that happens in. Next time anybody goes there with kids, I can't remember what it's called. It's like it's some jungle restaurant.
It's not where they're trying to recreate an earthquake happening.
No, they recreate a rainforest. I think it's called rainforest or something, and you're in the middle of the meal and it rains inside the restaurant, and it thunders, and you can sit at a table where it rains, or you can sit at a table with an umbrella, and there's lightning, and sort of the gorillas get angry, and it's all...
So you get greeted by a maitre d' who says, raining or not raining, sir?
Well, you get asked, you know, you get told. I think it's called rainforest, and, you know, it's very light rain, it's sort of that misty rain, but it's rain, and you sit there in the rain.
What do you think of when I say the word Chattanooga?
The Chattanooga Express, Chattanooga Choo Choos, the TV show.
So in the Chattanooga Lookouts, who are their AA affiliate of the LA Dodgers, in their ballpark, they have a Chattanooga Choo Choo, which choo choos its way along the outfield fence whenever a Lookouts player hits a home run. Fair way to celebrate.
Yeah, it's just, you know what? Only in America. It's called Rainforest Cafe. A few people have been there. It's one of the strangest places on earth. Yeah. I'll tell you what, how do you reckon that'd go? Because people are looking to ways of enhancing the AFL experience.
Well, what would you do? If you're going to go to a Saints game at Etihad on a Saturday night in the middle of July, what's going to make your experience more comfortable or unique, apart from a 6-goal win?
Yeah, a win would be great. I wouldn't mind a train for every goal. That'd be great. Just imagine if you pull three on in 3 minutes. Ooh, by the end, get the train off. I think we've done something great with football. That light show that means that people suffering from epilepsy can't go to the football anymore. Is that our answer to the footy experience? It's blinding is what it is. Welcome back. We've been looking at the amazing things that sporting fields do to draw fans. I've just found the daddy of them all. This is extraordinary. They're an A-class baseball team, so minor league team called Aberdeen, Maryland's Aberdeen Ironbirds. During October, the 13th innings of every game sees the outfield converted into a house of horrors. They wheel on various attractions, like a cannibal ride, ghost train, and all the kids in the break for the 13th innings, all the lights are turned off at the ground, have 10 or 15 minutes of scare rides, and then they start playing again. Imagine, it's a really important game.
A lot of AFL club members would say that they've been on many a scare ride with their teams over the last couple of years.
Yeah, we've got our equivalents here. Travis Cloak kicking for goal. It's horrific. Sam Gilbert kicking in from a behind. No, don't do it. Don't do it, Sam. Let's go to Western Port. Rob Harrison, pro fishing charters, is as canny a man in a boat when it comes to finding whiting, fish, you name it, as there is in Victoria. He's dang busy. I'll give you the phone number after we speak to him. If you want to go fishing this summer, then go with somebody who is A, experienced, B, hardworking, because he goes from spot to spot making sure that there's fish in the boat, and most importantly, go with somebody who knows how to fish, can actually tell you this is how you catch a whiting, this is how you catch a snapper, this is how you catch them, you name it, they're all different. Good morning to you, Rob. You're out there on Western Port.
Certainly am. Good morning, Mark and Nigel. Yeah, we're out here. Absolutely beautiful conditions. Couldn't get any better.
Now, just somebody said, which baseball game has 13 innings? Sorry, it's the 13th. It's sort of between the 7th and 6th. It's top and bottoms are added up to get to the 13th innings, of course. It's called, it is Cal Ripken Stadium. And somebody has played at that game. There you go. It's played at that ground. We'll get to that later. Rob, beautiful conditions out there. I spoke to you earlier on. You've got a few blokes, maybe ladies as well, on the boat. And early doors, you'd got off the mark with some nice size whiting. How's it going now?
Yeah, still getting them. Over the last half hour or so, it's dropped off a little bit, but they're all big fish. We're going for King George whiting, and they're all big fish, so quite good. The weeds picked up a little bit, but we'll get away from that after the next drop.
Rob, we've had a cold spring. Does that actually help conditions on Western Port Bay and how many fish are biting?
Definitely not. It's affected the charter boat industry because it's been windy and cold and miserable. Today is beautiful. Tomorrow, 30 knots. Sunday, 25 knots. So it makes it very difficult. What it's doing, though, is keeping the water temperature down. We're down, it's still 8.5 degrees. It should be 21. And the whiting love that warmer water. So it has been hard all round trying to get fish.
The fact that there are big fish this time of the year, when we say big, what's a good size whiting? What's the limit? So what's the smallest fish you're allowed to keep on the boat? And what would you call bigger whiting, the sort of size that you've mentioned this morning?
Yes, well, small ones, the legal size is 27 centimetres, which is absolutely crazy because they're so small and skinny. They need to boost that up to at least 30, maybe 32. But the fish that you classify as good whiting is virtually 36, 38 centimetres up into the 40s. Most of the ones we've got today are 38 to 42.
Lovely.
So restaurant quality fish, they are. The big, fat whiting in there. It's down in numbers, but high in quality. So, the little thin ones, 32, 34 centimetre ones, there's not much on them. When you get them up to around the 40, it's a decent size fillet on them. And, the way we're doing it is killing them straight away through the brain, then salt water and ice. You cannot get a better eating fish than that.
So just very important that people keep a slurry on their boat. All you need to do is get some ice from the servo and get water from the place where you're fishing and create that sort of ice slurry if you've got reservoir there, somewhere you can keep the water, a big esky, and it keeps them absolutely pristine, beautiful to eat thereafter. Rob, they bite differently, whiting sometimes, normally in the warmer water, pretty voracious, and they can really take that bait. But you also can catch them when they're inquiring, and takes a little bit more work, doesn't it?
That's right. That's why we use such fine tip rods and light line, because they can play around with it. Earlier on today, they were just touching it and just moving it, and you move the bait a little bit and they hit it a bit harder, and if you're a good hooker of fish, you'll hook them. So, yeah, there is times where they nearly rip the rod out of your hand, which usually indicates a lot of fish down there all competing for the food. Or when you're, you know, not so many, you've got to really angle them and just time that hooking of the fish right, and then just take your time getting them in.
Rob, 10 days out from Christmas and Boxing Day, and everyone, I guess, descending to the coastal locations, not just specifically on Western Port, but for anyone who's looking to have a fish, what are the key things that need to be prepared over the next 10 days? And I guess using your time wisely to not be caught in the rush around Christmas.
Yeah, that's going to be hard. Everyone descends on all the holiday spots, so your boat ramps are just chock-a-block full. Charter boats get full, except the ones at Hastings, because no one holidays at Hastings, unfortunately. The one thing that I keep pushing, especially over summer, and a lot of people don't do it, is protecting yourself from the sun. Going out fishing, you have reflection from the water and you have sun directly on you. So if you're not properly covered up, and those head socks you can buy, they're the best. And because the reflection off the water, I've seen people come off air with burnt faces, not using any sunscreen lotion or anything like that. But you're looking into the water all the time holding your rod. So that's the number one preparation. Next time, just make sure your rods and reels are in top condition and be prepared watching the weather and tides, so it's you're going out and not just wasting your time going out in terrible conditions and bad tides.
So you did well not to mention me with that warning about getting sunburnt. I've made a couple of terrible blues, but I've learnt my lesson. One last one before we say goodbye, Robin. Away from Western Port, of course, there's been a lot of excitement because Hazelwood, is it Dam Hazelwood?
Pondage.
Stocked up with barramundi, and that became available to the public to fish for the first time on December the 9th this year. There are restrictions, one per person per day. If you've got a boat, you've got to go in a ballot to be one of the 25 boats on the pondage. But for the first time ever, people can go fishing and catch barramundi in Victoria.
Yes, and unfortunately, it's going to be short-lived because Hazelwood Pondage won't be warm anymore when they close the Hazelwood power station. So it was a great idea at the time, but I think someone should have said, will you still be in operation for the next 5 years? So I think they're closing down next year, and that's it for the barra fishing. But
what happens to the barra? If the water gets cold, do they die?
Yes. That can't survive in cold water.
See, that's a real waste, isn't it?
Disappointing, because they're up to 6 kilos. They're thriving. There's a lot of bait fish in that pondage. But unfortunately, you know, without that warm water, they're not going to survive. You don't have to go into a ballot if you want to fish by land.
That's right.
You can go down there and fish land fishing. If you're a good caster with a lure, you can do well, especially early morning and evenings, where they'll come into the shallows after the smaller fish. So it's still there, but, you know, beautiful fish up to 6 kilos. Just a shame that no one asked that vital question.
Yeah, well, would have been worth asking. But
Wouldn't it?
But make barra while the sun shines, and it's still available to anybody who wants to get to Hazelwood, a couple of hours from Melbourne, Gippsland Way. Harrow, good fishing. Hopefully the boat fills up this afternoon with lovely, lovely whiting. And we'll speak soon. Now, Rob Harrison, Pro Fishing Charters, 0408 375 413. Pro Fishing Charters. If you're going to have a fish, do it with the best. And this bloke's the Fish Whisperer. Thanks, Rob.
A pleasure. See you later.
Back to the tangles up the other end of the boat. You take him away for 10 minutes, you're bound to get a tangle between a couple of the newbies. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Mark Penaluna, CEO of the Werribee Football Club, who are next season homeless. Welcome back, Nigel Carmody in the studio for Squires Loft in Essendon. We've been talking about ballparks and great fare. Well, you don't need to go to a baseball game or a football game to eat well in Melbourne. You just need to go to 131 Buckley Street, Essendon. Steak, summer, they are synonymous. Next season, Nigel, Werribee in the VFL have got a fair bit of travel. Go through the list.
Yeah, with Avalon Airport Oval being upgraded, these are the Tigers' road trips. Torquay, Arden Street, Hoppers Crossing, Wangaratta, Frankston, Footscray, Witten Oval, Etihad Stadium and Icon Park.
And as we welcome Werribee CEO Mark Penaluna onto the program, the problem with that is, Mark, they're your home games.
They are, mate. They are, but we embrace it and we're very, very much looking forward to it and we'll have a lot of fun along the way.
Have you got Reuben Kincaid to drive the bus like on like on the Partridge Family? Because there's going to be a fair bit of bonding on the bus.
I think Johnny Lamont would like to be David Cassidy, but that might be 25 years too late.
The challenges presented by the travel are not permanent, but I guess every good coach and CEO will view it as an opportunity. What are the positives?
Well, the positives are, as I said, we're going to make sure we have some fun along the way. We'll organise some supporters' buses. We talked about having ferries on Port Phillip Ferry into Etihad and into over to Frankston and things like that. Sponsors trips to those sorts of things and a real opportunity for the Werribee boys and also the Kangaroo boys for playing for us to bond along the way. And we've often heard AFL coaches talk about going interstate and bringing the boys closer together. Then we'll see those sorts of things as real opportunities for us.
Mark, how's it been to collaborate with your on-field foes to use some of their home grounds in 2017 as yours?
Well, generally speaking, Nigel, the relationship between the VFL clubs is very, very positive, and we share ideas around income generation, overall marketing of the competition, and so they're always more than willing to try and help each other out. And we did that a few years ago. You might recall when Williamstown ground was upgraded, and we committed Willie to play four or five matches at our ground. So there's a bit of
Mark, can you just move to a better area? You've gone from CEO to Dalek. We're going to have to try. He's being scrambled. Sounds like the CIA's got involved with that phone call. It's all coded now. We'll get Mark back on in a moment. The collaboration between clubs is strong. They realise they're competing for the one title, but they're also competing as a competition for patronage. So they work together on many counts.
Everyone's responsible for growing the pie together. We're seeing Frankston not only used by Werribee next season in their Tiger clash against Richmond in round 13, but Essendon and Port Melbourne are going to play a game down there in round 4 as well.
Mark rejoins us. Mark Penaluna, CEO of Werribee Football Club. Mark, the grounds are interesting. The one that interests me the most is the Frankston City Oval, because of course Frankston, hopefully for just 1 year, find themselves not playing in the VFL. Efforts are already underway and they are good, they are strong to see them return in 2018. And it's a long way from Werribee, but I think it'll be well appreciated and really not only would they be assisting with, but would be overjoyed to have you play two games there.
Yeah, well, we'll be playing a game there at Frankston, obviously, against Richmond. And look, we're more than willing to play a game at Frankston. John Hook approached us about looking to play a match there. And John and the VFL team have been more than accommodating and meeting our request to play at Wangaratta and Torquay and Hoppers Crossing and Arden Street and all those sorts of things that you mentioned before. So we're more than happy to play a game at Frankston. They're a really good club. Tina and the guys there have done a terrific job to hold their club together for so long. And if we can help in some way to reshape the Frankston Footy Club in 2018, then we're more than willing to help out.
And John, you mentioned Arden Street. You head there for a match in round 3. Interested to know the ability for that facility to house a game. It is a public space effectively now, along with North Melbourne training there. But we know there'll be a JLT Community Series and NAB AFL Women's Competition doubleheader about a month before you head there.
Yeah, we'll catch up with Hannah and the guys at Arden Street. They're currently working through the infrastructure required for that match, Nigel, in February. And then we'll look at see what facilities we need to provide. We did have a walk around with John Hook and Ricky Bell back in October. And similarly with Hoppers Crossing and Wangaratta, we'll need to bring infrastructure in for those matches. We understand that. That's going to be a cost that we're going to have to bear, but we need to bring in elevated coaches' boxes behind the goal camera media box, all those sorts of things we need to bring in, then so be it. But we know at the end of the day, then we're going to walk back in 2018 that the facilities that we're going to have, we think they're going to be the benchmark within the VFL.
Mark, thank you for joining us today. It's going to be a challenging season, but as you said, has great prospects for fun, for fans, as well as players, as Werribee and the VFL head on the road. If you're a fan of Werribee, then be part of the caravan that takes you right around not only Melbourne, but also parts of country Victoria. All the best for the upcoming season.
Yeah, mate, we'll be the travelling Tigers.
Yeah, well, put on a show and I'm sure people will follow.
We will. Thanks, guys.
Great stuff. Mark Penaluna there, CEO of the Tigers, Werribee in the VFL. We are going to do a little bit of that style of travelling after the break. We're heading to Bendigo, where one of our leading trainers, Danny Curran, has stables ahead of this weekend's racing. And one of many trainers, not up and coming, but now on the scene, that have really made an impression in recent times is Bendigo-based Danny Curran. He has done so in no small part with the sort of limited budget that would see most of our big trainers not even get out of the hotel room. But he's been able to get to the sales, buy horses and keep a whole new range of owners, not only interested, but hopefully involved for a long time with Thoroughbred Racing. He joins us now. Good morning, Danny.
Yeah, good morning.
You know how to shop. You certainly do. We'll talk a little bit later about the big dance, which is an extraordinary story, but more immediately, a very promising type of stayer, and we need them here in Australia. Welcome Striker goes around on the weekend. Tell us his story and why some new owners are really enjoying their experience in racing.
Yeah, well, we bought him the same day as we bought the big dance, actually. I went there to buy a two-year-old runner and a horse to stay. Everybody says that Australians can't breed stayers, but we can breed them, but we can't wait for them. And I was determined that we would give this horse every time, every chance. And he's still a year away from being at his best, but he's developing quite well and starting to show the fruits of a good staying preparation, background.
Danny, being by Striker, did you anticipate that he was going to eat up 2,400 metres and hopefully beyond?
Look, I bought him on type, particularly more for the mare. His mother was a horse called Hello Hello, and she won 10 races in the bush over sort of staying distances. And she's also by a good New Zealand sire called Prince Echo, which I like. And Striker, of course, nobody knew what they were going to do at that stage, but he was a big, raw-boned, sort of looked like a staying type of horse. So, I remember that Sub-Zero was bought to win a Golden Slipper and ended up winning a Melbourne Cup. So go and buy him on type, not on breeding, I think.
And a significant jockey engagement with Michelle Payne on tomorrow as well.
Yeah, well, Michelle hasn't ridden for us for a while, but she was pretty keen to ride the horse, which is good, she knows her way around Flemington, doesn't she?
Certainly does. The beauty of the racing this time of the year, post the Spring Carnival, is whilst some of the best horses are being put away and set maybe for races in the autumn, there's still great prize money on offer. And actually, with Country Cups now integrated, an opportunity to test yourselves against very good types.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's a great time for the horses, particularly the up-and-coming horses. He's only a four-year-old Welcome Striker who's only had 13 starts. And, it would be unfair to be expecting him to be going against the A-graders in the spring. And so we can test him. He'll go to Flemington tomorrow, and I'm not even going to say necessarily that he'll win, but he'll run really well. And he'll be better again next year, and then the year after, he might be doing what the Prince of Penzance did as a six-year-old. You never know. That's what we dream anyway.
Can we build a bank in an hour at Yarra Valley with Heroic Girl?
No.
Save it.
Her caper too.
Oh, that's
She's a year away from it as well, really. And she's second starting the race up to 1950 metres, so we're hoping she can run in the first four.
Well, you've got a great eye for horse flesh, so we'll leave her aside for a year. we've run out of time, but the big dance cost $750. Most blokes have wives that spend more on handbags, and the big dance won $300,000. So Danny,
it was great for a while.
Yeah, brilliant that her racing career was cut short, as has been this interview, but as not will be the case with Welcome Striker. Plenty to come from him. Thanks, Danny.
Yeah, good on you guys.
Great stuff. Thanks.